KALW.
That's my dad in the hat. Then he pulls this one up. That's my mom hanging out of the window.
One neighborhood in San Francisco has an annual event dedicated to celebrating its past.
It's a human instinct, I think, to be interested in the earlier days.
Today, the Potrero Hill Archives Project. Then a young woman in a refugee camp tackles the mental health issues plaguing her community.
Each and every day in school is so special because it was something that I really wanted.
And we meet a mother and daughter with a shared love for one particular band.
It's so funny because I feel like the Pointer Sisters are so underrated, but they are a part of our soundtrack, the soundtrack of our life.
A story from our partners at Northgate Radio and more. I'm Hanat Baba, Mrs. Crosscurrents. We start today by visiting a quintessential San Francisco neighborhood that's constantly changing but still has a community feel. It's a new story from our series Culture Keepers, profiling people who uplift traditions in the Bay Area.
I was very much fascinated by bells and lights and whistles.
It's my role to learn it well and protect it and keep it.
Alors, je vais faire l'explication en anglais. Soyez tolérants.
Just the energy and the drive that they have, like the future is looking f***ing golden.
Potrero Hill is like a village within a city. It's got a view that never disappoints, and its houses are built on serpentine rock that's rumored to hold magical powers. KLW's Molly Blair Salyer introduces us to a small group of neighbors working to collect stories and preserve the shared history of the hill.
It's a crisp fall evening, and I'm at St. Teresa's Church for the annual Potrero Hill History Night.
You have to come over here and see these pictures.
Rosemary Osler's family has lived on the hill for more than 75 years. She guides me through the crowded church basement room to a table covered with large black and white photos depicting neighborhood scenes from the past.
That's my dad in the hat. Then he pulls this one up. That's my mom hanging out of the window. And my brother thinks she was telling him, go next door to the store and buy some salami.
Volunteers dish out slices of Goat Hill pizza while neighbors obsess over local history. People like Leslie Castellanos.
I'm just a junkie for old things. I studied some archaeology in college. I have an active imagination. I love this stuff.
And there's one person here I know pretty well.
Oh, hello. Sorry to interrupt. My name is Molly, and I'm doing some recording for KLW. We're actually talking to my mom right now. Would you mind introducing yourself, please?
Yes, my name is Penny Blair, and I'm the mother of Molly Salyer.
Molly
Blair Salyer.
Our family lived here from 1973 to 1986.
Six of us lived in the house we lived in, along with many cockroaches. And actually, Yuck. It was the house where I believe the Potrero View started, in the basement there.
That's the neighborhood newspaper, which is still in print. As people take their seats for the evening's main program, Keith Goldstein, president of the local merchant association, warms up the crowd.
I want to find out who has the most history on Potrero Hill. So, is anybody here more than 80 years? Mary, Paula.
The audience is roused by the headliner.
Former mayor of San Francisco, Agnos!
Agnos, as you can imagine, has a lot of stories to tell.
When I came to Potrero Hill early in 1967 was when I first moved here. Thank God I did not sell that place at Connecticut.
There's the one about Mother Teresa knocking on his door in the middle of the night looking for a favor. And one about his human rights trip to El Salvador with the neighborhood priest.
Before I tell you that story, I just want to acknowledge Peter Lilienthal, who's really a Potrero Hill treasure. And tonight is just one last example of that.
He's referring to the man who quietly organizes History Night.
This is the only one that's an intimate experience on history in a neighborhood like ours. And so he is very special. He's always the guy who puts it together, and I'm glad I'm finally part of it.
I meet up with Peter away from the hubbub of History Night.
Okay, well, I'm really excited to see a picture of
just my... wait. Look at this is from the SFMTA, so Muni, and here is your house in 1905, I believe, when they were putting in the tracks for the 22 Fillmore.
Peter got into local history just like the rest of us.
I was hoping I could find a picture of my house, like a lot of people are looking for, and we did find pictures of my house.
Peter is the director of the Potrero Hill Archives Project.
When I moved here in 75, Julie Gilden had started an oral history project. She was particularly interested in the Molokan Russian community that had moved to Potrero Hill after the 1906 earthquake. So I joined the archive project, and we were interviewing Molokans, and then it expanded to other longtime residents, and old photos began to appear.
Over the decades, volunteers for the project have recorded around 100 interviews, representing the wide variety of lived experiences of Hill residents.
We had everything going, like peace and freedom, food, pantry, and stuff like that. My parents used to bring us this truckload of food every Saturday morning for the panther. And we had lawyers there who was working on Vietnam, doctor violence. And we had the ministers. We had a whole group of ministers from all faiths.
That's how it was. In those days, there was no locks on houses, you know, or anything. And everybody trusted, everybody helped everybody.
We used to take cardboard and wax it. And we had to stop where, I can't remember the gentleman's name. He didn't want us on that, his house. But we'd go up the house on Carolina, slide down on the wax cardboard. That was one of the big things for us. You know, we fight over cardboard so we could come sliding down the hill. Fabulous. I still remember that. And we never got hurt.
The group has projected old images out of neighborhood windows and is making a community cookbook.
I'm just curious about what I don't know, and I want to find out more. And I think, you know, the research we do and the interviews that we do, you know, are all valuable. It all just kind of adds up.
Peter says before the pandemic, he'd go to big weekend gatherings for history lovers at the Old Mint. And now, he's inspired by groups like the Western Neighborhood Project and Shaping SF. History Night is the main event each year for the Potrero Hill Archives Project. But keeping history is precarious. Even though a lot of their footage is at the main library, Peter tells the crowd that proper storage and making use of the archive are pretty big challenges.
I forgot to say earlier, although history is not a museum, it's a conversation, we've accumulated a lot of physical stuff, which at the moment is stored in my basement, not the best place. So if you should know of 600 square feet that a nonprofit could have long term, tell me about it. Thank you.
When I asked Peter why he's so keen on this stuff, his answer was pretty universal.
It's a human instinct, I think, to be interested in the earlier days.
In San Francisco, I'm Molly Blair Salyer for Cross Currents.
We want all of your recipes and all of your history because we want to represent the richness, diversity, and creativity of our neighborhood.
Molly reported that story as part of our current Audio Academy training program. And if you're a radio maker, KLW's inviting early and mid-career audio journalists to apply to our Beat Reporting Fellowship. Find all the details at klw.org/opportunities. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba.
My family and I have lived in a refugee camp as refugees for more than 19 years.
Last month, KALW had a screening at our 220 Montgomery space in downtown San Francisco for the new documentary, A Divine Journey.
In Malawi and also in the camp, there are a lot of suicide going on because people are facing mental health problems.
The film profiles a young woman named Divine Mugisha, and it follows her journey as she sets out to study psychology to treat depression and prevent suicides in disadvantaged and refugee communities. The filmmaker Annette King and Divine herself joined us at KALW for a screening and a conversation with KALW's Emmanuel Nadeau. Here's an excerpt of that conversation. Divine begins with a story of almost giving up.
One thing that I came to discover about myself in all this journey was I was strong enough, and I was strong more than I knew myself. And there was something in me that I needed to sit down and look into it, because no matter how much I wanted to give up today, I'll sleep tomorrow morning, I try again. The same process, it fails, and still more want to wake up and do something different because I wanted something different. So actually, if I go deep details about how I almost gave up, it's when I was waiting, you know, like being a random refugee, it's hard in most of the refugee camps, and we don't have any choice. We don't have any chance to be resettled. Nobody lives in the camp for more than 10 years, but we lived in the camp for 19 years. Everyone gets resettled. But being a Rwandan, you are never resettled. We had a chance to study in Canada due to with WOSC, Lakewood University Services of Canada. And I applied for it. On the last moment, they told me, you don't have a personal story of how you fled your home country. How could I tell my personal story when I was just 9 months old? What will I say about how I ran away? I don't know anything. I just know that my parents brought me here and they faced this and these challenges. They told me, no, you have to bring us evidence of why you ran. I found it so ridiculous. And that was the only way I knew I was going to continue my education, and that failed. So I gave up. I said, okay, anyway, I'm not gonna go further with my education, but at least I'm going to live my life in the best way. That's why that was the moment when I started Sabotive Pill Organization. I was saying, it was like, even if I won't get the happiness of being in a better place, but I'll get the happiness of being who I want to be. So that's why I started Sabotive Pill Organization, to help other people to work on my passion and also be happy at the same time, be happy where I am. So after that, I got another scholarship, which is the MasterCard Foundation. I actually got it last year in May. I was supposed to travel to Kenya in August. I searched for a travel document, only to be denied, saying that you are a refugee, you are supposed to live in the refugee camp. Forget about studying, forget about traveling, forget about everything. Just live where you're supposed to be. You know, just stay where you're supposed to be. I was like, what? I visited the immigration each and every day. Each and every day, going the same response, insults and all that. And I really gave up on the scholarship. And I started applying. I gave up on the scholarship, but I still started applying for other scholarships. I was like, if this didn't work out, maybe, just a maybe somewhere it's going to work out. And that's how I started working, looking for scholarships, applying for different schools. Yes, I was denied. And lucky enough, earlier this year, that's when, in the moment that I had given up, I had forgotten about university. I knew I had made peace with myself that I'm never going to the university. That's when I was called and I got to join university. And right now I'm a happy person, and each and every day in school is so special because it was something that I really wanted, and I know how much I went through in order to get where I am.
Can I share something?
Yes.
Special? So, oh, this is remarkable. Yeah. Divine, as obviously her mom talks about it in the film, she's incredibly humble. What one of the things that she hasn't shared yet that I'd like to share is that, I mean, she started Supported Pillar Organization, but then, and she went off to university and didn't just think about herself at university. She's still thinking about the kids, the youth, and at Zeleka refugee camp. And so when she was fundraising for them to go to school, she recognized that not all of the funds that or the fees that go to get the kids to school will get them a quality education. So she started doing research and found out about Khan Academy, which is an online, you know, free world-class education. And I remember when she messaged me and she says, you know what I want to do with Supported Pillar Organization? I want to start a boarding school for orphan refugees, for kids to have a safe and loving place to go to school, and power it through Khan Academy leadership, and use that and create a leadership academy. So basically using the funds she's already raising for the housing and the facilities to care for these children and get them internet and solar panels and everything that they need. And so she's fundraising for that. And I mean, I see the work that you're doing, you and your team, and that leadership academy, I think, is not far away. It's going to happen, and it's just a matter of time. So it's just remarkable to see that while she's juggling being away from her family for the first time in her life, away from her home, and she's still thinking of others and starting something very significant and meaningful. And we're really happy for her and hope that, you know, some of the awareness from the film can help bring support to the cause and to the Leadership Academy that Supported Pillar is going to be starting.
That was Divine Mugisha and Annette King speaking with KALW's Emmanuel Nadeau. We'll have a link to the documentary A Divine Journey at KALW.org/crosscurrents. And we've got a lot of live events coming up for our 220 Montgomery space. Find our event calendar at KALW.org/220Montgomery. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba.
Six.
Remember that song from Sesame Street? Well, if you were a kid growing up in the 70s and 80s, like me, you probably know it, but you may not have known it was the Pointer Sisters, four women from Oakland whose songs were everywhere in that decade. Reporter Celeste Hamilton Dennis brings us this personal story about a Pointer Sisters tribute show and why the love is still going strong today.
I talk to my mom nearly every day.
Hello, doll.
But I see her in person only once a year. She's in New York. I'm in the Bay Area. We've always been close. Some of my favorite memories from childhood are watching her get ready on the weekends. Curling iron, red lipstick, black pants if she was going to her job as a bowling alley waitress, short skirt if she was going dancing at Winter Circle. While the Pointer Sisters played on the radio. I miss her. And that's why I'm at a Pointer Sisters tribute band show at the New Parish in Oakland one night in January. Adisha Adefala is one of the singers up on stage. She's commanding the mic, rocking a sharp blazer.
Got beads, bangs. So you're going to hear that as I'm talking, you guys. So we're going to transcend you to this time that we're speaking of with the Pointer Sisters.
She says she's channeling her mom that night.
popping her collar and teasing her hair and putting on her mascara and who she was getting sexy to, you know, like, and so she was listening to the Pointer Sisters.
Adisha's singing Fire at the first ever Pointer Sisters tribute show.
And I remember hearing the song Fire, and I was like, oh, what is that song? I love it. And didn't know who the name of the person was that sang it, but it became one of my favorite songs as a kid, you know? It's just so swagalicious.
When I told people I was going to the show, they replied with one word. Who? And in case you're one of those people, let me tell you. Actually, Ruth Pointer is going to tell you.
Well, Joan was the baby. She was just a bubbly, free spirit that everybody loved and adored. Then Bonnie, of course, was like a ball of fire, our Beyoncé. And then Anita was the serious one. And I was always kind of a wild beast.
Their music couldn't be confined to any one Grammy category. They did pop, R&B, funk, jazz, dance, rock, even a little country.
I don't want to hear another word you have to say.
And their fashion? Legendary. The 80s were already outrageous, but they took it to a new level. Sparkly tassels, neon shag coats, giant gold geometric headpieces. They were completely unapologetic.
This album has a very female point of view. Why was that something that you particularly wanted to sing about?
We feel good about the way we are, you know?
Here's Adisha again, one of the singers at the tribute show.
The way I fix my hair and paint my eyes, don't it drive you crazy, baby, when you see me dance? And she's like, take off your socks. I don't like no socks in bed. Like, you know, just like, what is going on? Like, they were all sexy. They were so sexy.
Sexy church girls. They got their start singing at their parents' church in West Oakland, that's now in the Fruitvale District. I went by there one day and ran into the new pastor, Demetrius Evans, who's one of those people who hits their hands when they get excited.
Are you proud that they're from Oakland?
Oh, most definitely. Yeah, you gotta love that they're from Oakland. As a person who's born and raised in Oakland, you can always point to, you know, them being rooted here. You know their parents moved out here, but, you know, you got that Southern seasoning, but that Oakland vibe is just all over and all through it, so... Yeah, always brings tremendous pride that you can point to, yeah, that's Oakland all day, you know?
No, so recreating that vibe for the tribute show while only practicing a couple of times?
It was a big risk. I don't know if I can explain how big a risk it is to say you're going to do the Pointer Sisters in Oakland. You can really fall flat on your face.
That's Grail Swartz, a Bay Area guitarist who was asked to put together the show.
So why are tribute bands so important to our culture?
Well, I don't know that they are. We'll just start off with that. I mean, let's keep it real. Anyone who's listening to this, you know that's true. I know it's true. It's all it is, hey, let's relive our memories. You know, it sure felt good when I used to listen to that music. I want to feel that again.
He did not have a clue at first.
They're not easy songs.
And there's a reason why there hasn't been an entire tribute show dedicated to the Pointer Sisters before.
That one song, Yes We Can and No You Can't, my Lord, you see, I can't even say it all right now. Like, they just had some challenging arrangements.
But Grail's in three bands that play improvisational covers and originals, and putting shows together is what he does.
That's really what I'm known for, is my hustle.
And he has a chance to show off his hustle that night in Oakland. The place is packed. It's dark, and there's a red glow from the lights that's bouncing off all the sequins people are wearing.
There was a lot of feminine energy there that needed to be there. In fact, all the men needed to step back, and it needed to be a night for the Pointer Sisters.
The band goes through the hits. Jump, Slow Hand, Automatic. It brings me back to Long Island, to my mother's radio with the bent antenna.
It's so funny because I feel like the Pointer Sisters are so underrated, you know, but they are a part of our soundtrack, the soundtrack of our life. And, you know, to hear it on stage, it's validating. It's like, you heard what I heard. You felt what I felt. And for that moment that we were on stage, we all got to revel in it. And that's priceless.
I felt it. And I think others did too, mostly.
A funny thing happened afterwards was I was taking a lift and this lady was like, I know you from somewhere. And I was like, yeah, where? And we was trying to figure it out. She was like, you did the Pointer Sisters show. I was like, whoa, that actually happened to me quite a few times. Okay. Now she said, now you didn't do my Pointer Sisters right. I was like, oh Lord, vocally I didn't do them right. She's like, no. No Pointer Sisters got beads in a hair. You should have had the afro. So, I mean, it just goes to show you how important the Pointer Sisters are. Look what you done
to me. That was reporter Celeste Hamilton Dennis. Her story first aired on Northgate Radio. And if you want to celebrate the legacy of the Pointer Sisters, well, the new parish is doing its second annual tribute to the iconic group this Saturday. We've got all the information at klw.org/crosscurrents. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.